The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice filled the air. Talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's a cattle on the hill. It's a range full of thrills. It's a way of life. Settles in your soul.
Settles in your soul. Yes, it does. Good morning, everybody. This is Terry Raposa and my partner, Wynn Carpenter. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm doing well. And our faithful producer, Liam. How are you, bud?
I'm doing great.
Good. So
nice to have you back, Liam.
Oh, yeah.
So you get plenty of sleep last night, buddy?
I did. It's the time change is nice because you wake up well rested, but there then the whole day feels really long because you think you're an hour ahead.
Yeah, so, there you go.
Yeah.
We're broadcasting live from KCNR Studios in downtown Reading, 96.5 FM, where the music sounds better, and 1460 AM. If you want to listen online, we stream worldwide at KCNR1460.com. And we archive forever and ever and ever. So you can go back and listen to it whenever you want. Now, a couple of quick announcements today, and Wynn has a special person he wants to talk about for a moment.
Yeah, Bob Martin was a gentleman that used to work here at the radio station. He was a producer for a number of years and became a good friend of all of ours that are patriots. And he would go to all the events and hang out with us and do a lot of things for us. And he did some commercial sound bites for us. And you'll still hear him on some of the commercials, some of the older commercials. But Bob is not doing well. His health is failing, and he's just not doing well at all. So I'd like to ask for some prayers for him and for his wife, Anne. You know, caregivers always need to have the prayers as well, so we want to make sure that they're both held out in prayer. So I just wanted to share that with everybody, just to please pray for Bob and for Ann.
Absolutely. You know, we've been talking, and we do this every week now. It's something on our show we want to do, because when you go to a Board of Supervisor meeting, you spend the first few minutes at that meeting listening to the Board of Supervisors talk about county employees and what a great job they're doing, and somebody gets an award, you know, they get a yogurt or $25 gift certificate to some restaurant. And, you know, I can appreciate that, but, you know, what about the people who elected and the who elected the people who are aboard the Board of Supervisors? And what about the people that pay that those great salaries, incredibly huge salaries, that many of these people have? So
the taxpayers?
The taxpayer. And it's really not something to where, you know, you can say, okay, well, you know, you're doing the job you're hired to do. It doesn't mean that we don't give you props. Not saying that. But every frickin' week, you know, three or four or five people, you know, it just, it gets to the point of where, again, government grows. So what we decided to do is we're going to have the Citizen of the Week. And the Citizen of the Week that we have this week, and maybe a couple of more weeks, and that's Frank Rose. If you don't know Frankie, he is our Sergeant of Arms here. He is probably the most giving person I've ever met. He and his wife are outstanding people. He's a great patriot. He's a veteran. He's a friend. And, you know, to know Frankie is to love him. And thank you, Frank Rose, for everything you do for our community, everything you do for the veterans. And you truly are a treasure, if not the treasure, of all the people in Shasta County. And one other person I'm going to reach out to this morning, and that's Lori Bridgeford. Lori Bridgeford is the most giving person I think I've ever met. She's there. She's been with Bob Martin. She has been with anybody who's ill, anybody that needs help. She's there, and she's always there to help every single time. Lori is a very, very special lady, and we're blessed to have her in this county as that kind of giving person. So with that, we will go on to talk about where we were on Friday, my friend.
Friday. We were down in Sacramento County.
We were.
At the federal courthouse, Robert Matsui Federal Courthouse on 501 I Street. And we went there to witness court in action, or reverse going backwards, or going down the slop chute, whatever you want to call it. The judge is a hot flipping mess, but we already knew that because we went before her several times in the past couple of years, and for her to do what she's doing to the Second Amendment here in California is wrong. I'm just going to put it that way. It's just wrong.
Yeah, we have our guest calling in right now, but our producer seems to be...
she's denying the Constitution. she's forcing... Actually, what she does is she's hand-feeding the state's attorneys all the information that, you know, she wants to hear from them. She doesn't allow them to just speak and do what they need to do. She hand-feeds them. But when the Second Amendment survival attorney is trying to fight for it, she pretty much dismisses what she says and ignores what she says and is coming up with all these other fabricated lines of baloney. So it was something to witness. And do you know what was really telling in that whole room? There was not one vacant seat in that room. And most of those seats were filled by students of law school, or maybe they're at university level going to go to law, but they were all students in there witnessing what's going on. They filled the jury box. They filled the public viewing area, and it was full. And for the people that came down there to support this particular case, we had to wait in line and not be able to get in there. There was a chance that we wouldn't be able to get in there because of all these students being there witnessing the action of this judge. She's the chief magistrate for the district and
the Ninth Circuit.
Yeah, I don't understand it.
Yeah.
I don't understand how this works because these kids are witnessing what they see, and hopefully there's some brain cells, but a few of them at least going, what the hell's going on here? This is wrong. She's denying the Second Amendment. Why is she denying the Second Amendment? I would hope that that would be the case, at least maybe two out of all the, what, there were 70 of them in there, something like that. So hopefully two out of that group, maybe. I don't know if that's being generous, but I would hope there would be more than that, but... It was very frustrating to hear what she was going to do because we went down there expecting her to give a, I don't know what you want to call it, a final ruling on it. But she kicked the can down until 2024. So they're going to have different court dates that they have to go back for in 23 and then even in 24. And our attorney said they were done. She was resting her case, essentially, saying that the Second Amendment, and she was very blunt about it. She was very honest about it. And the attorney we have is off the chart smart. She knows her information. She's got it dialed. And, you know, she's from New York, and they just went through that in New York, and her husband is on the Supreme Court for New York. And they're conservatives. So they understand what's going on with the Second Amendment there because they've dealt with it. And she's helping us with our case here, Mark Baird's case. Oh, my gosh, it's a hot mess because this judge is just doing what she's doing. She's kicking it down the road because she doesn't want to make a decision and then not be able to show her face in her wine and cheese crowd parties. And, you know, because that's what the liberals do. So
well, we do have Mark Baird on the line. Mark, how you doing, buddy?
Sorry.
I'm doing okay. How are you guys doing this morning?
Good. So give us a little background on the Second Amendment case, just a quick background. Probably a lot of the listeners have heard the background on it, and then give us your take on what happened on Friday. Go ahead, sir.
Well, I'm still I'm not finished digesting what happened on Friday, and I have a lot of more research to do, and it opens a lot of doors. But the Second Amendment case is this in a nutshell. We demand that the courts in the Ninth Circuit, California for the Eastern District, which is part of the Ninth Circuit, and has in the last 50 out of 50 Second Amendment cases ruled against the Second Amendment. They now have guidance from the Supreme Court. And by the way, this is not new guidance. This guidance is dates all the way back to Heller, which was 2008, City of Chicago versus McDonald. I think that was 2012 or 13. Satano v. Mass, 2018, Cruikshank, Miller versus U.S. I could go on and on. They've had guidance for 15 plus years that the Second Amendment means what it says it does, and that the plain text of the amendment, as the founders intended it, is the law of the land. California Constitution Article 1, Section 1 says we have inalienable rights. California Constitution Article 2, Section 1 says government was formed to benefit the people, not the other way around. Article 3, Section 1 says California is an indissolvable part of the Union and that the United States Constitution is the highest law in the land. And the Second Amendment to the United States Constitution says a well-regulated militia being necessary for the security of a free state, the right, not the permission, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. The case San Diego versus Peruta, they call it Peruta 2 now, which was decided in favor of Peruta for his begging the government for concealed carry. He wanted the government to have to issue concealed carry to everyone that asked for it if they weren't otherwise prohibited. And he won at the federal court level. He won at the circuit court level and the appellate court level. But since the Ninth Circuit doesn't like the Constitution, in fact, they hate the fact that you have the liberty to keep and bear arms, what they did was formed an in-bank panel, which is the majority of judges, all of, you know, the vast majority of whom are liberals. And they found against the Second Amendment yet again, in that they said that concealed carry is not a right. It is not a right. Write that down, folks. Concealed carry is not your right. It is a permission. States can do whatever they wish with that. They can require a license. They can require training. They can get your money. They can get anything they want from you because concealed carry is not your right. Peruta applied for a cert to the Supreme Court. Cert was denied. That is the law in the 11 Western states that encompass the Ninth Circuit. Concealed carry is not a right. Now, starting in Heller, then McDonald, Cetano versus Massachusetts, and finally Bruin, the court, the United States Supreme Court, and Article 3, Section 1 of the United States Constitution defines the Supreme Court as the highest court in the land. And then they also detail in Article 3, Section 1, and other such inferior courts beneath the Supreme Court, subject to the Supreme Court's directives, as Congress may establish from time to time. The inferior courts have been directed by the Supreme Court four times in the last 15 years that the Second Amendment means what it says it means, and it means what the founders thought it meant at the time they wrote it and at the time it was adopted as an amendment to the United States Constitution in 1791. It means what it says it means. And finally, the Supreme Court grew tired of the rebellious nature of primarily the Second Circuit, which covers New York, and the Ninth Circuit, which covers California, because they fined against the Second Amendment again and again and again and again and again and again and again against Supreme Court directives. So finally, the Bruin Court in Bruin versus New York Rifle and Pistol Association ordered specifically, they ordered all of the inferior courts, but they directed their wrath specifically at the Ninth Circuit and the Second Circuit, and our court is the Ninth Circuit, and they directed them to adopt this guidance. The case was about concealed carry, and they did say that show good cause is now unconstitutional. Well, what did California do about that guidance? Nothing. Penal Code 26150 and 26155 regarding concealed carry are still the same. They haven't changed, not a lick. You're required to do whatever the state wants you to do, and Peruta v. San Diego, or Peruta v. California now, tells you that that's not your right anyway. Our lawsuit does not concern ourselves with concealed carry. Concealed carry isn't a right. I am not concerned with concealed carry in this, and we did not attack the statutes regarding concealed carry in this lawsuit. We demand the right. Now, the Peruta court said one important thing. They said that concealed carry is not your right. If there is a right, Peruta says, it must be open carry. Well, Heller, McDonald, Cetano, and Bruin reiterate that the plain text of the amendment, when an individual's conduct complies with the plain text of an amendment, that conduct is constitutional. Open carry is our right, and it complies with the plain text of the amendment. The right of the people, the right, not the permission, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Therefore, openly carrying a loaded weapon within the state of California without government permission is our right. Now, California has enacted Penal Code 25850, which makes it a felony to openly carry a loaded weapon anywhere outside your home. And Penal Code 26350 makes it a crime, I believe this one's a misdemeanor, to openly carry an unloaded weapon anywhere outside your home. Concealed carry is not a right, therefore open carry must be. California has banned by Penal Code statute an enumerated right. Our lawsuit seeks to strike those two penal codes only. We're not concerned with 26150 concealed carry or 26155 police chiefs denying concealed carry. Concealed, if you want to beg the government's permission, oh, please, please, master, may I please conceal my gun and go here but not there and go here but not there and go at this time but not that time. And if I pay you enough money, if I jump through all the hoops, if you approve of me, will you please, please issue me a permit? And then, you know, some sheriffs, yeah, they'll issue you a permit if you contribute $10,000 to their political campaign. Some sheriffs won't issue them at all. Some sheriffs will issue them if they like you, but they'll take it away from you, like with Richard. They'll take your permit away from you when they don't like you anymore. But we demand the right outlined in the Constitution and as affirmed in four Supreme Court cases within the last 15 years to openly carry a loaded weapon anywhere in the state of California that is not otherwise prohibited, in other words, government buildings and courthouses, stuff like that. We demand that right. That's what this case is about.
Now, on Friday, and we've got about 6 or 7 minutes to the break, on Friday, what are some of the things that can you give us a few of the highlights of what happened in court, in your words, and just tell us what you believe you can? Go ahead.
Yeah, the hearing in the courthouse was twofold. One, it was to schedule the case, and as the judge called, well, at least we've moved this case down the road a couple of years. But it was more than that. That will be objected. We will object to that scheduling, by the way. That scheduling is not quite cast in concrete. The more important part of the hearing on Friday was our motion for a preliminary injunction in order to force the state of California to enjoin them from enforcing the statutory ban on the Second Amendment, Penal Code 25850, open carry of a loaded weapon, and 26350, open carry of a loaded pistol. The first question that comes to mind for a lot of people is, why didn't we go after rifles, too? Here's the reason. I'm not rich, and I don't have all the time in the world. So I'm going to fight the fight I think I can win, and it'll be another fight another day, and hopefully somebody else will step up to the plate on rifles. And quite frankly, when 25850 goes down and is stricken, I believe the ban on the open carry of loaded and unloaded rifles will fall with it. Naturally, it'll have to.
Can you explain what the PI would do to the folks out there who may not know?
Yes. Well, what the PI would do is it would bar county sheriffs, police, fishing game, anybody else that's law enforcement, it would bar them from enforcing the ban on the open carry of a loaded or unloaded handgun in public. You would be able to put your pistol on, leave your home without government permission, and merely to carry that pistol in the event of violent conflict with another person. In other words, your right to self-defense, the defense of yourself, your family, your community, your state, and your nation would be vindicated in the state of California, something that it has not been since 1968, when the state stripped your right to openly carry your weapon in the hopes that they could keep black people from getting their hands on guns.
I know there was one particular argument there about the burden of proof, And I remember the assistant attorney general, who was one of the, and the other one, I guess, was the deputy attorney general, who were the two attorneys for the state, were trying to shift the burden of a right that we have onto the plaintiff. If you got about 5 minutes, maybe you could go into that a little bit. That was
well.
Pretty interesting.
Let me go back to the initial findings of the PI first. So
okay, then we'll hold that.
If we were able to affirm the preliminary injunction, mm-hmm. then that would bring the Second Amendment back to the state of California, and we once had it, and we had it for over 150 years until it was taken from us. What we want to do is reestablish that. Now, in order to do that, the judge must affirm the PI, the preliminary injunction.
Gotcha.
That was what the bulk of the hearing was about, the conditions under which it would be affirmed, what the test that we have to meet in order to affirm it, the test the government has to meet in order to prevent it from being affirmed. And our position mm-hmm. is this. There is a test in court called the Winters test, and that sets a four-prong hurdle that plaintiffs and government have to cross in order to have a PI either affirmed or not affirmed. And the Winter test is kind of an interesting thing. First of all, you have to be able to succeed on the merits of the case. So the judge asked the state, does the Winters test apply here? In other words, are there four bars that we have to meet in order to get this PI? Oh, yes, Your Honor, the Winters test applies here. So then the judge asked our attorney, does the Winters test apply here? And Amy stood there for about a second contemplating that, and she said, well, the Bruin test applies. Well, what is the Bruin test exactly? Again, the judge says, now, mind you, the Bruin did not create any of this language. It simply affirmed the language in Heller and McDonald and Satano again, mm-hmm. because it's ordered these courts to follow those previous cases again and again and again. Mm-hmm. Well, Justice Thomas finally got mad, and now in Bruin, he is ordering these courts to follow this guidance that's already been published time and again. So the Bruin test is twofold. Only. There are two questions in the Bruin test, while there are four in the Winters test. The Bruin test is this. Does the individual's conduct comply with the plain text of the amendment? Yes or no? So the judge asked Amy, well, do you think you will succeed? Well, yes, Your Honor, because the conduct we seek is absolutely within the unqualified command in the plain text of the Second Amendment, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, carry them outside the home in public for the purpose of self-defense, falls squarely in the plain text of the amendment. There is no question there. The state doesn't even argue this point. They don't allege that we're asking for something that's outside the Second Amendment. They never have. They simply want to be in charge of it and control it. Then the second part of the Bruin test is this. If the answer to question one is no or yes, the government must prove, mm-hmm. not the plaintiff, mm-hmm. the government mm-hmm. must prove that this conduct has been regulated since 1791, and those regulations are widely accepted. But even then, if regulations interfere with the plain text of the amendment, the text controls. There is no question in this case. There is no test. Does the individual's conduct comply with the plain text of the amendment? The answer to that is yes, an unqualified yes. We have no right to concealed carry. We have a right. We know that because the Constitution says so, and it's in plain English. Well, if we have no right to concealed carry, we must have the right to openly carry a loaded weapon in public for the purposes of self-defense without government permission and without begging the government for a license. And even if we were to beg the government for a license, there is no such thing as an open carry license in California. There isn't one.
That's
so you
true.
You couldn't beg the government for a license right. here because there isn't one.
Right.
Therefore, yeah. the plain text controls, mm-hmm. we win. Now, the government argues on their side, oh, no, Your Honor. And here's the interesting part of this, that I'm like I said, you know, I know some of these things seem open and shut, but they have to be digested because we're dealing with a court here and we're dealing with a judge. But by the way, I did get the sense that she was convicted by our arguments. I got that sense two or three times.
I think you're right, and maybe we should go into that after the break, because we have to take our one break and hold your thought, and I think that's a good point to come back to, especially the judge's demeanor. And yeah, I agree with you. Anyway, we're with Mark Baird. We're talking about maybe the most important case on the Second Amendment. It is certainly for California. And we'll be right back after this break. Time has come.
451.
KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and online at kcnr1460.com. Join Sue McClain weekday mornings from 6 to 7 for the Sue McClain News Hour, where you'll hear the up-to-the-minute local news, national and international news, weather, sports, and a whole lot more. Followed by Free Fire Radio from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. with Carl and Linda Bott. From 9 to noon, be informed and laugh along with Armstrong and Getty, equal opportunity critics. From noon to 3, learn how to get out of debt with Dave Ramsey. From 3 to 6, don't miss constitutional expert Mark Levin. Monday through Thursday night, starting at 6 p.m., we have local shows featuring everything from the paranormal, local history, North State Now, and unsung heroes of our area. From 7 to 9, tune in to Ben Shapiro, your local downtown radio station, KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and online at kcnr1460.com.
If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issuance of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and the corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all their property until their children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Revolution has started.
Sovereign Minds, now on Sundays, 10 to noon.
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon until 2. Our expert guests will give you the whole story rather than a bunch of sound bites. Our commercial-free archives are always available at wethepeopleradio.us.
Sponsored in part by Pape Machinery, located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, for all your local John Deere ag and turf products. Join us every Sunday from noon until 2, wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them? Red moon horizon. I see trouble on the way. I see earthquakes and lightning. I see bad times today.
Bad moon on the left.
Really? Hey, now before we get back into chatting with Mark, I want to put this out here real quick first. If you want to support, and we would hope you would, want to support Mark's case, please send send checks to PECAN, P-E-C-A-N, and in the memo portion of the check, down the bottom left corner of your check, put 2A, and then mail it to 14421, again, 14421, Old Oregon Trail, Redding, California, 96003.
All right.
All right.
All right. Good job, buddy. So, Mark, we were getting on to the judge's demeanor once the arguments were going back and forth, and I thought it was, I thought there were some interesting things that happened there, and I know that there are certain things that you probably want to talk about, and some things maybe that you don't. But give us your view of what was happening there with the exchange between Amy and Judge Mueller, and also, you know, how you were, I mean, I was beginning to believe, too, that she was actually having a hard time trying to maneuver around not giving us the PI. Go ahead.
Well, it was the rectitude of her intentions, as the Declaration of Independence says. first I'll just mention the things that I'm not going to talk about today. I'm not going to talk about Brussels sprouts because I hate them. So if that's on the table, you can forget my participation in that. But now back to Judge Mueller and the PI. I could see during the argument, especially during the part about the Winters test, are you likely to succeed on the merits? Yes, Your Honor, plain text complies with the conduct we seek. And then finally, the second one was the plaintiff must establish there's a likelihood of irreparable harm. Well, case law is very clear on this. Denial of an enumerated right is immediate and irreparable harm, period, end of story. No more discussion required. States may not ban enumerated rights, Murdoch v. Pennsylvania. States may not turn rights into permissions and may not charge a fee for the exercise of an enumerated right. The lack of the banning of an enumerated right is harm. It cannot be discussed. It cannot be decided. It is harm. And it is harm under Title 42, 1983, and it's harm under Title 18, 241 as well. The next thing was the balance of equities and hardship. There is no balance of equities when enumerated rights are concerned because the defendant, the state, can suffer no harm when the state itself has banned the enumerated rights. Only the plaintiff can suffer harm, the people. There is no balance of interest here, and here's where the Bruin test takes over. The Bruin court expressly ordered the Ninth Circuit court to ignore interest balancing. You cannot balance the interest of the people versus the interest of the state where an enumerated right is concerned because the Second Amendment is the product of the balanced interest of the people to people's right to defend themselves against the government's right, the government's ability to take that right away. In other words, the Bill of Rights is interest balancing. These are the interests of the people that were placed above government's policy table. Mm-hmm. They're above government. Government may not discuss enumerated rights. They belong to the people, not the government.
We do have a caller on the line. We don't have a caller on the line.
And if the government tries to ban an enumerated right, then and they have the ability to do so, then the Bruin Court declares that it is no right at all. If successive judges as the Bruin Court says, if the third branch of no branch of government, not even the third branch, can deny an enumerated right, because if they have the power to do that, then it's not a right at all. So that is how, and then the fourth thing is the public interest. Does the plaintiff have the public interest in mind? Well, the public interest is always in mind in enumerated rights. The government is on the opposite side of that. They restrict enumerated rights. The people desire enumerated mm-hmm. rights.
Mm-hmm.
There's no test there. And that's why the Bruin test overrides this old Winters test deal. Mm-hmm. And I think Amy made that pretty plain, and the state was stammering through that. They're saying, they said again and again, Davis, Ryan Davis did, and Wiseman was in the background nodding his head, and
Is Ryan Davis the Assistant Attorney General?
No, Ryan Davis is a staff attorney for DOJ.
Gotcha.
Wiseman is the Assistant AG. And believe me, he'd love to be the AG if Bonta moves on to higher stuff.
We do have
and
a
that's why I think
caller on the line, Mark.
Go ahead.
Okay, Mary, we have two people on the line, so a lot of times Mark won't be able to hear you quite as well because of and so I think we're just not going to take any calls, Liam, and if someone calls in and they have a question, just simply when you see an opportunity, ask us the question. Thank you. Okay, Mark, go ahead so we won't get interrupted again. Go ahead, buddy.
The Attorney General, the state's attorney, I'll just call him, the state's attorney argued again and again, these guys, the plaintiffs, meaning us, the plaintiffs are us, the defendants are the state for people, so you can kind of keep that in mind, and I'll keep repeating that. But the defendant, the state's attorney, kept saying, well, they just want to upset, they want to throw out California's license we have, you know, they want to be able to carry a gun openly without a license. That's what they want. They want to throw out the licensing, and Bruin won't let them throw out the licensing. But he intentionally mischaracterizes that because he's in a panic. The state is absolutely panicked that in the state of California, there will be something that you have that they can't and won't and don't control. They're terrorized by that thought. I can tell you, I was listening to this guy, and I thought, wow, this dude's really in a panic. Because he kept claiming that all we want to do is get rid of California's licensing scheme, and Bruin doesn't allow that. And he mischaracterized that intentionally, and we're working and searching constantly to make the judge understand that's not our intent. I have no intent of throwing out California's crooked scam of concealed carry. Sheriffs make money off of that deal, man. I mean, you know, and look, if you want to beg a sheriff and give him your money, I'm okay with that, believe me. If you think concealed carry is tactically superior and you don't mind going in and begging your sheriff for permission to carry, and he will look at you and say, well, I might give you permission, but first I want a psychological screening, a background check, fingerprints, minimum training, then we'll consider your application. If that's okay with you, I'm fine with it. I don't want to throw that scheme out. I couldn't care less about it. I'm not. My permit is about to expire, and I will not be asking for another one. I will be exercising my constitutionally guaranteed pre-governmental right to carry my weapon without permission. That's what I'll be doing. If you want to beg the government, cool, do it. We don't, our intent is not to throw out their scheme, to license people who beg for permission. Our intent is to establish that the plain text of the Second Amendment guarantees the pre-governmental God-given right to openly carry a loaded weapon for your own defense. That's our only intent.
Well, you know, I think that one of the things that really was a highlight of what was going on is when Amy, near the end of it, I believe that the judge was trying, or the, excuse me, the attorney for the state, with it almost seemed like the judge's blessing, was wanting to go back to discovery. Did I hear that right?
Yeah, you did. It's a funny point here, but you know, I don't know how many of you guys have ever read Charles Dickens, but there was a book he wrote called Bleak House back in 1900 or so, and it talks about this poor guy who, and it's a long convoluted story, and there's a lot of characters. I'm not going to go through that, but what happens is, there was some malfeasance with attorneys in an inheritance case where this guy had this house, and it went to probate court. And by the time the attorneys got done with this thing, years and years and years had gone by. The guy was dead, and all the money had been spent on lawyers to try to determine whether this guy would get his inheritance or not. So literally, this is what governments do, and this is what courts do. And this is what we must stop, and our goal is to stop this before it gets going in this case. This case is 3 years old already. We've been in court 3 years, and the state is still begging the judge for more time because they are out of options. There is no history that supports restrictions on open carry that date back to the founding era or any other era, by the way, that have ever stood the test of court. There were restrictions on open carry in shortly after the Civil War, but they only applied to freed black people. So the only restrictions on open carry were those meant to prevent black people from having guns. The only restriction in California's history about open carry was intended to disarm the Black Panthers and all the rest of us along the way. The only regulation in California's history regarding concealed carry that stood up was in 1917 when the sheriff in Los Angeles wanted to disarm Mexicans, and he made the really wild and quite frankly laughably comedic claim that Pancho Villa and his men were going to sneak across the border with guns down their pants to murder Los Angeles residents in their beds. that never proved to be true. It wasn't true. It was a fabrication so that the county sheriff in Los Angeles can gain control over concealed weapons in order to prevent Mexicans from having them. And the California legislature says, yeah, cool, control. We like that. And that bill stuck. So the only two restrictions to any firearm carry in the state of California were racially motivated, quite frankly, pure and simple. And you can like that fact or you can not like it, but it is the truth, and it's easily verified. Now, the judge was convicted by our arguments in some areas, and we will convict her further on this scheduling. Look, I'm 70 years old. I'm not a young guy, and I'm not a rich guy. I want to exercise my rights now while I'm alive. That's the point. My point is, yes, to restore rights for everyone. That's a side issue. That's part of it. My case is intended to restore rights for my children, grandchildren, and future generations. Yes, that's true. But I bring this case to restore my own rights. And it doesn't do me a hell of a lot of good if I die broke before the case is finished and have to drop it, or I die before the case ever gets to court because the state needs another 50 years to see if they can dredge up some history that's never existed before and that no one's ever found. And the Bruin case talks about that as well. They say the history is well discovered. There are 40 pages of history in McDonald. There are 60 pages of history in Heller. There's another 40 pages of history in Bruin. There's another 40 pages of history in Sitano. All the history you need to know is already printed. And Bruin says that. It says you don't need a bunch of experts. You don't need a bunch of discovery. Read the four cases that control the Second Amendment now in this day and age. Read these cases. You got all the history you need, and the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Judges can do it. Lawyers can do it. You can do it in the normal course of a trial. So Bruin even issues instructions there. Bruin issues instructions as to what history is relevant, and that is the history that dates back to 1791. No other history is applicable to restrictions upon the enumerated right, which was codified at the time of the founders as they intended it to be, and in the language that people understood. So the court is really, what they're doing is business as usual. They do this to people all the time. You will be broke or dead before your case sees the light of day. Well, I don't intend to let my right languish. On January 1st, I will begin to exercise my right. And what the court needs to do is hustle it up, because this can be adjudicated very quickly if courts and lawyers just do their jobs.
Well, how come she keeps putting it out? I get that she's just kicking the can down the road, so that's what she's doing, and she has the authority and the power and the intestinal fortitude to do that. But Amy, your attorney, she had the argument. It was done. It was settled. Everything, she was finished with everything she had there, and she was very good about articulating that. But, and the other side, you know, like we were saying before, that the state's attorney, he was just standing over there just dancing around, just trying to figure out what the hell he was going to say, because you have to know that he has to know or to understand that he's on the losing side here, and he has nothing. He's got nothing. He's just standing there, you know, bare. There's nothing. He doesn't have anything. So for her to keep handing him these little fragments, trying to create something out of it, there's nothing there. So how is she held account for good behavior as a judge to do her job? How do we do that as citizens?
Well, good behavior doesn't mean good behavior anymore. Good behavior means for life now. It didn't mean that in the founding era, but it does now. Judges serve for life, period. We could impeach a federal judge, but, that's another, I don't know what, I'm just going to guess, let's say $1 million in legal fees and political campaigns and efforts, and it would distract us from the original intent of the exercise, which is to restore Second Amendment guarantees that were stolen from the people of California in 1968 in order to disarm black people.
And her peers would have to pick that up and run with it. Right?
And my intent is to keep my eye on the ball. Now, if there was a group that formed, much like the group that recalled Leonard Modi, if there was a group that formed to impeach this federal judge for unnecessary delay of a constitutional process, I will certainly send a check, and I will go wherever they go and wave the flag wherever they wave the flag. But I can't be in charge of that.
From what I understood from Amy, that is that, as Wynn said, the judges have to impeach the judge. I don't think that the people have that right, or if it is somewhere, I don't know where it is, but when I did discuss it with Amy, neither one of us really knew whether that was a legislative thing on impeachment, or it would have to be.
Well, that would require a tremendous amount of research, and I'm just not going to do that yet. I got to get this case going where it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you're right. Yeah. I think it's a rabbit trail. Go ahead.
Well, I don't think it's a rabbit trail necessarily, but like I said, I just don't have enough brain cells to do these two things.
Well, we have to find jurisdiction. That's what I'm trying to say. We have to find who has jurisdiction over that procedure.
Right, and that's a discussion that needs to be held, but maybe in another venue or another time. Because, I do feel that the judge, and this is just a feeling, and that's why I'm emphatic about that, I've watched this judge for years. Mm-hmm. We've been in front of her many times. I've been in front of her in drug cases. I've been in front of her before. And I can't claim to know her, but I do know her behavior in court.
Mm-hmm.
And as I watched her body language and her face, she was really struggling with how not to award this preliminary injunction.
Mm-hmm.
She was struggling.
I agree.
She saw the vindication of the right in our argument. She saw it. Now, the question is, does she have the judicial integrity to follow the law as ordered by the Article III Supreme Court, as ordered by them? Does she have the judicial integrity to do it, or doesn't she? Her heart is telling her no, because she votes with the state like the rest of the circuit does. In 50 out of the last 50 Second Amendment cases, the Second Amendment has lost in California circuit and appellate court. Or will she see the rightness of this and vote with her legal responsibility and her duty to office? That's the open question. And when asked, How do I know you're going to win this case on the merits? Tell me that. How do I know? And she really wanted to hear the answer. And Amy said this, because the conduct we seek complies entirely with the text of the Second Amendment, Your Honor, we will win this case.
Mm-hmm.
And she sat there quiet for just about a moment. And I have the actual verbiage. And I'm going through it now and transcribing it and then doing legal research on every nuance of what was said. And it's going to take me, you know, a while. But we have 14 days to object to the schedule. And that logic is, quite frankly, a little more important right now. The PI has been submitted. She knows everything she needs to know, or everything she wants to know anyway, about whether to award us the preliminary injunction. Now, look. Pray for us, folks, because if this preliminary injunction is awarded, that will afford us constitutional carry for perhaps years while she kicks this case down the road. I mean, you know that she's going to kick the can down the road to September of 2022 or 2023 already. We need coverage now. If we're awarded the preliminary injunction, that's what we get. And by the way, if she refuses the preliminary injunction, and this was one question she had that we had a ready answer to. Why did you file the preliminary injunction before you actually filed the case? Because in courts in California, the preliminary injunction is more important. This case, Charles Nichols has been in court for 15 years trying to get open carry in California. And guess where he is? He is no closer than he was the first day he filed his case after 15 years. That should horrify anyone who thinks they have a constitutional guarantee in the state of California. You ought to be horrified, because I'm going to tell you, you don't. Your liberty's gone. But if we are awarded this preliminary injunction, we've got coverage probably for decades, and we'll be able to open carry until this case finally winds down, at least until then, and then we'll win the case. So the preliminary injunction is the most important component to the case at the moment. And the important part is whether she if she awards, good, we're done. If she doesn't award, we can appeal just the preliminary injunction, which is very open and shut, by the way. This case is open and shut. The state doesn't even argue any of the components of the case. The only thing they argue is they're not in control of the right. They don't even argue that we have the right.
Yep.
They just want us to have to get a license to exercise it. So they don't object to the facts. They just don't. Their argument is they don't like the facts.
Yeah,
so
you know,
we
have about
award. I'll hurry. If she does not award, we appeal only the preliminary injunction to the Ninth Circuit. And because PIs are emergency in nature, we jump ahead of the crowd. And after that, if the Ninth doesn't award the preliminary injunction, we go straight to the United States Supreme Court with only the preliminary injunction. And guess what? The conduct we seek complies with the Bruin guidance. And if the Supreme Court takes up that PI, and they might be likely to do it because this is the right case to do it with, then we would be awarded the right to openly carry a loaded weapon for self-defense in the state of California without government permission while the case winds its way through. And if you win the PI, you're going to win the case.
I think that that is remarkable, and I could see that. I believe that the judge was having a come-to-Jesus moment in understanding what you just said. If we win the PI,
yes,
we win the case. Now, I'm going to have
win the PI. We will win the case.
We will win the case, and I'm going to have Wynn again give the address because, folks, we need your help. It isn't free. $5, $10, anything you can send to help us. You know, unfortunately, these things cost money, but it's just reality. So, Wynn, you want to give that address again?
Yeah, absolutely. Make your checks out to Pecan, P-E-C-A-N, and in the memo portion of the check on the bottom left-hand corner, put 2A. And then mail it to 14421. Again, 14421 Old Oregon Trail, Suite B, like boy, Redding, California, 96003.
Now, Mark, we have 2 minutes, so land the plane for us, will you, sir?
Please help us. Please help us. I can't stress this enough. If you are not willing to stand right now with your money and your time, we will not win. I'm not a rich guy. I don't know how to say that. I'm 70 years old and I still work for a living because the company that went broke stole my pension. So I can't afford to keep this going on my own. I'm sorry. I wish I could, but I can't. If you're not willing to contribute money to this case, you will not be able to exercise your Second Amendment guarantees without your knee pads in front of the sheriff. And I can't stress that any more than I have right now. If you don't stand with us now, you will fall, and your rights have already fallen with you.
Mark Baird.
The time has come for 51, because that's the only way to end this tyranny for good, for once and for all, is to form our own state.
Mark Baird has done this on his own. When he first started this case, he put his own money out. His own gas in the car. He goes down, and if he has to stay, and pays his expenses. He has done this for all of us. This is for the state of California, so that all 40 million people in this state have a right that's guaranteed by the Constitution. And this particular case will affect other states also. He's done this out of his pocket. He and his wife, Cindy, have done this very unselfishly. It's been remarkable. When he first decided to do it, he was willing to stand up on his own. We need to help him. Pray for Mark. Send him whatever money you can. Give them whatever help they can. And Mark, thank you from all of us. You're a patriot, and amazing that you and Cindy are really putting it out there. You're putting your money virtually where your mouth is, and virtually helping for us to succeed in protecting our constitutional rights. Thank you, brother.
Thank you, Mark. Okay, time has come.
For 51.
Let's get it done.
You bet.
It's not our bill. We had no say. You don't serve us. You serve LA. The time has come for 51. In a Jeff-
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.